I thought before we began on the topic of truthfulness and living truthfully, I would circle back and look a little bit more around the issues of kind of a consumer mindset and then the contract covenant tensions sometimes. So I thought I'd do a little bit on that and then we'll move on to truthfulness. But I think part of the challenge for us today is that there is almost a default understanding of ourselves primarily as consumers. And that runs through, just because the market is so dominant, that runs through a lot of the ways in which we perceive ourselves and perceive our interactions. And if consumer identity is the primary one, then we will think contractually, because that's the vehicle for consumerism, as contrast. But when we bring that orientation to church or even to the classroom, I think it changes how we understand relationships. So when you have a consumer mindset, it means that your commitments are pretty limited. You're in an exchange relationship. It's oriented around fulfilling whatever needs it is that have brought you into that relationship. It gets trickier, and that works fine if you're buying a shirt or something like that, but if you come into church with that kind of mindset, or even to a school situation, if you come in as consumers, there's this sense that, well, I'm sort of purchasing this product, right? And sometimes people think about it that way, even coming into church. And, you know, if I'm purchasing, then I'll decide how much I invest and whether there's a good return on the investment and so on. And I think what happens then, though, is that those kind of assumptions shrink our most significant relationships into economic transactions. I think a consumer, as you all are readily aware, a consumer mindset is often what stands behind the kind of casual switching among church members, where they move from congregation to congregation. And I think leaders can become very discouraged and feel even betrayed when they've invested significant time and energy in a person or a family, only to have them quickly move on to another community because, quote, their needs aren't being met. Sometimes they don't even stay long enough to figure out whether their needs could possibly be met. But frequent moving on to another experience, I think, often reflects a careless view of relationships and the mutual commitment that's actually involved. And I think the other side of that is that as leaders, we need to remember that the kingdom is far bigger than our particular church or congregation or projects. But I think it is easy to see in switching not only a lack of commitment, but an absence of gratitude for the community and its gifts when people leave very quickly. I think in terms of thinking about mixing the contract covenant model, I think most Christian organizations appear to operate with covenantal expectations. So if you think about churches or Christian schools or missions agencies or even Christian social ministry agencies, we expect strong commitment to a shared task and vision. We put a high priority on community and God's work through community. We often depend on staff members to make personally sacrificial decisions for the sake of the vision or the group. And frequently, we talk about being family, right? That's oftentimes how we understand, especially staff, but volunteers, the community itself. I think part of the contemporary confusion, part of the contemporary confusion, especially in staff and congregational relationships, is that we actually operate with a hybrid of covenantal and contractual expectations. So in employer-employee or staff-parish relations or whatever, we value shared undertakings and the sense of partnering with God, but I think quite often we turn to contract when we run into difficulties. And so when we have to make difficult budget decisions or deal with layoffs, we shift abruptly to contractual models. And we add up the benefits and losses, and we don't give very much attention to the shared narrative, to the intertwined lives or previous sacrifices that have characterized the group, and especially the kind of language that we use. And I think the result is a sense of betrayal and loss, especially by the people who have experienced the sharp edges of contract. Sometimes when people are laid off, at least this is, I don't know if this happens in churches, it does happen in schools. When people are laid off, they're given little notice and they're told to gather up their things and leave, right? It's very, very much a business model, right? They receive formal letters terminating employment, spelled out in the language of severance pay, ending dates, and warnings about legal action. I think those people are rightly confused and angry when covenantal themes that had shaped their tenure within the community, themes of fidelity, community, gratitude, and sacrifice, suddenly evaporate because an alternative model kicks in. And I think this is a significant reason that work relationships sometimes end badly in Christian settings. All the language of vision and shared undertakings seems like a mockery when communities don't find ways to honor relationships and the sacrifice when employment arrangements or staff positions are terminated. Christian organizations are obviously not exempt from the need for cutbacks or employee evaluation and discipline or hard choices, but it often seems that the processes used for these difficulties are separate from the day-to-day covenantal framework. Does anybody have any comments on that? Any sense that that's in this?
So, I mean, I can't think of, because I've grown up in this country in this time, I can't think of an alternative. I mean, because I don't want to be the one that faces the bad end of things, but I also think on the other side that if you're in a church staff sort of situation and there is someone that you know, and an entire ministry that they're in charge of and hundreds of people and networking out of the community, and the church as a whole is suffering because of this is not the right person. You know, there's certain grace and community can come around that person, try to help them to get to where everyone really sees and wants things to go. But if it doesn't work, with what are you left? I mean, honestly.
Oh, I really do think there are times when people have to be let go. That's not what I'm saying. I am saying how we do it matters. Being attentive, I mean, I really do think that there's, at least I have seen in my experience with multiple Christian organizations, there's a total gap between how we talk about ourselves when things are going okay and what we switch to when we run into difficult issues. And I don't think that has to be. I think it's because we haven't really figured out a way to do it better. But I think it could be. Did you want to?
Did, and I think I was at a church staff one time that had a long history of high turnover, and one of the elders, and there was one particularly unpleasant one, and one of the elders said to me, you know, we really need to do better about letting people go. My observation from the process was that we really needed to do a better job of bringing people on, because it really starts there, I think. But in my role, I've seen and heard firsthand a number of worship pastors, ministers of music who are let go under extremely ugly circumstances, as you described.
I think it's very painful to be the person making, or the group that's making the decision to let people go. It's also painful to be the person that's being let go.
No, they enjoyed it, actually.
Well, then they should have found it painful. Yeah. Which ones? The people who were let go or the people who did it?
No, the let go.
The people who did it. Yeah.
I seemed almost to revel in it.
Wow.
Wow. Well, that's a power move, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my concern really is not to suggest in any way that we don't have to make difficult choices, but that the difficult choices still need to be held. If we're going to use a covenantal model, it ought to be a little bit more consistent. There ought to be conversation. I think the kinds of things where you assume that a person would undermine the ministry and therefore they're kind of kicked out on no notice and those kinds of things are just, they're hard. I think they're deeply disrespectful, and they make it hard for people to recover from that. Now, there are circumstances where people are dangerous. I'm not talking about those kinds of things. I'm just talking about the ordinary letting people go, or particularly in layoffs where they haven't done anything wrong, you just can't keep them.
Right.
It's still difficult sometimes to do that well.
I've had the feeling that some of this happens because we compartmentalize our Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
We are Christians here to do this, But when we get over here, our Christianity gets thrown aside and we just deal with business.
That's right. That's right. And so it becomes much more of a business transaction than it was before. And I guess one of the things I'm suggesting is that, you know, if we're comfortable with sort of covenantal conversations about being family, about being committed to the kingdom, then that really shouldn't end when somebody is let go or something. There can be ongoing connections and a more respectful way of handling it. Now, having said this about contracts being problematic, I think an absence of contracts sometimes makes Christian workers vulnerable. Their fidelity can be misused. Employers or pastors or congregations can sometimes be harsh and abusive with staff members they know are committed to the larger vision. And so if we're fearful that people will leave, it's hard to build anything if we don't have that kind of trust. But if we're sure of their loyalty and commitment, it's easy to misuse it. And so I think part of the reason that we turn to contracts is to protect vulnerable people from abuses of power. So this is not a total critique of contracts or something. Spelling it out, understanding who's responsible for what, and so on can be helpful. I think in settings in which contractual and covenantal expectations are combined, we can also presume on employers and employees in other ways. If the goal of the community is good or important, there can be underlying expectations that sacrifice is appropriate and gratitude unnecessary. You just simply assume that, of course, people will do that because it's for the kingdom. And sometimes congregations assume that in kingdom work, concerns about justice in working conditions or pay are kind of inappropriate. And in other cases, I think sometimes shallow expressions of gratitude are used as cheap substitutes for equity or justice.